From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Today on the program, we have Dan Farr, founder and producer of Salt Lake Comic Con, to give us a preview of that event.
If you went to Comic Con and just looked at the costumes and did nothing else, I mean, that is an event in and of itself. But then you got all the celebrity autographs and the chance to meet them and the vendors and the artists, all the comic book creators. You have too much.
Plus, Utah Democratic Party Chair Jim DeBacchus responds to comments coming from the Attorney General and the Governor on same-sex marriage. And your summary of today's top local headlines. All that and more coming up just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And thanks for tuning into The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. A little bit later in the program, we'll hear from Dan Farr, the founder and producer of Salt Lake Comic Con, to get a preview of that upcoming event. But first, we have this summary of today's top local news headlines. In June, three same-sex couples brought suit against the state of Utah, challenging the state's ban on same-sex marriage. Earlier this week, the governor's office and the state attorney general's office responded to the suit in a 13-page legal brief asserting Utah's, quote, sovereign right to define marriage on its own terms. Here's Assistant Attorney General Philip Lott describing the state's case.
What the state feels is the law that would apply to this case, that Utah citizens have the right to define and regulate what marriage is. There have been other states across the nation, of course, that have chosen to recognize same-sex marriage, and Utah has the same right as other states do to define and regulate marriage. And what it says is that marriage consists only of the legal union between a man and a woman.
But in an interview with KCPW, Utah Democratic Party Chair and State Senator Jim DeBacchus singled out another part of the state's legal brief.
The legal opinion that the governor and the attorney general filed in official court documents belongs on the Colbert Report, not in a legal filing. What they said is there is no discrimination because gay people are free to marry just like non-gay people are. It's just that they can't marry people of the same sex. It defies any logic.
The state is asking U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby to dismiss the complaint made by the same-sex couples. That complaint argues that Utah's Amendment 3, defining marriage as a union exclusively between a man and a woman, is discriminatory and unconstitutional. That amendment was passed in 2004. The Utah legislature and Governor Gary Herbert want to take over public lands in the state. But nobody really knows how much income it will generate or how much it will cost. Because of that, during the last legislative session, a bill was passed authorizing an economic study on the costs and benefits of turning over federal lands to the state of Utah. The study is now underway, and KCPW reporter Kim Shusky was at the Capitol to hear from the group of economists who will carry out the study.
The federal government is responsible for managing 30 million acres of land in Utah. But many in the legislature and public think the state can manage those lands better. Economists from the University of Utah, Utah State University, and Weber State are collaborating on a study to figure out the economic impacts on the state if those federal lands are transferred to Utah. The researchers met with the public on Wednesday to describe what they are trying to do and to get feedback. Economist Paul Jackus says one of their goals is to test the hypothesis of whether the state can manage the lands as well or better than the federal government. He says they will look at the economic impact of many different uses, including grazing, energy extraction, and tourism.
Teresa and I are going to take a look at the economic value of recreation in the state of Utah.
Jackus says they will look at the role of what public lands provide in terms of quality of life as well. They want to know what effect all of these issues have on communities in terms of economic growth, migration, and income. They will also look at the costs of managing the lands for wildfires, species protection, and environmental degradation, among other costs currently incurred by the federal government. Many members of the public asked that the health impact costs of energy extraction, refining, and transport be included in the study. But Jan Stambro says that was not in House Bill 142.
I think the challenge that we face is trying to get across the fact that the House bill language laid out exactly what we were to provide. And it really didn't tell us to look at health effects and air effects. And, I mean, those are a range of issues that would have to come into play at some point. But the House bill language is very definitive, and that's what we're doing, is providing the data that are specified in that legislation.
Most of the public's comments centered around whether the state should or should not take over federal lands. But Stambrough says the purpose of this study is to not make a value judgment. Instead, their goal is to gather and analyze the data, which will mostly come from federal agencies. Even the ability of researchers to gather that data was called into question. Pat Shea, who is the director of the Bureau of Land Management in the 1990s, says he doubts the data from federal agencies will be accurate. He says in the case of the BLM, while the Utah State Office is allocated a set amount of federal money, individuals have multiple responsibilities that sometimes extend outside of the state.
So somebody in Utah may also have responsibilities in Wyoming or Colorado. And as you go along, that's a regional question, not a state question. So being able to divide it is, you can do it, but it's arbitrary.
Stambrough disagrees and says she's been in touch with all of the federal agencies that manage lands in Utah, and they have told her they can give detailed budget data.
The agencies that we've talked to have told us that they will be able to get us data that I requested. So the issue isn't can we get it for 2010, 11, and 12, it's can we get it for 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Once all of the data is gathered and analyzed, the researchers will be given a number of scenarios they will then model. One goal is to see which land management options will provide the most economic benefit to the state. Many of the people in the audience were concerned about this part of the study because of the potential for politics to come into play when building these scenarios. John Harja with the Governor's Public Lands Policy Coordination Office, which will develop the scenarios, says they will be made public.
You know, people asked a lot of very good questions, made a lot of very good statements about you need to have this part or that part. The scenarios will probably be fairly broad, more recreation, more development, and we'll see where they go. After that, if we get answers that are more questions, we may get even more tight.
The study is scheduled to be completed by November 2014 and will cost $450,000. For KCBW, I'm Kim Shusky.
Officials were bracing for another possible flare-up Thursday afternoon in a lightning-sparked wildfire that has destroyed 14 homes near a Utah mountain resort town. Hundreds of firefighters are setting back fires and bulldozing lines to contain the 2,000-acre fire. They also repositioned fire engines and crews inside the heart of the 2,000-acre fire to protect 250 threatened homes. For the third day, an evacuation remains in place. The Rockport fire is burning about 10 miles from Park City. Summit County District Fire Warden Bryce Boyer says a 14th house was lost on Wednesday, but firefighters saved 22 others from burning in the same area. More than 250 firefighters have the blaze about 25% contained. The Summit County Sheriff's Office was offering to escort people to threatened homes for emergency supplies, pets, or medicine. West Valley City Police are launching a new online map where residents can view data about crimes and arrests in the community. The police department said in a statement Wednesday that the map will only display incidents where a written report has been filed. The website also allows citizens to submit anonymous tips and sign up for neighborhood watch reports. The map can be found at wvc-ut.gov/crime-map. West Valley City Police say the map is also available as a mobile app. Hall of Fame quarterback Steve Young and his wife Barb are scheduled to give the keynote address at an upcoming conference promoting acceptance of gays and lesbians in the Mormon Church. The couple's talk is set for September 14th during the three-day Affirmation Conference in Salt Lake City. The Youngs are described as committed members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and have been active on LGBT issues in the past. They are longtime supporters of organizations including the Trevor Project, which provides crisis intervention for gay youth. In 2008, Barb Young publicly lined up against California's Prop 8, which defined marriage as between a man and a woman. Young graduated from Brigham Young University and retired in 1999 after 13 seasons with the San Francisco 49ers. And that's our local news summary. I'm Roger McDonough. We'll be right back. And now on the rundown, we turn to our conversation with Dan Farr, the founder and producer of Salt Lake Comic Con, to get a preview of that event, the headlining actors, authors, and superheroes who are coming, and to hear about what prompted Farr to bring Comic Con to Salt Lake City. First off, Dan, I wanted to ask you, how did this happen? How did you guys decide to have a Salt Lake Comic Con, and when did the idea come to you, and how did it happen?
That's a great question. If I'm feeling like I want to joke with people, I tell them that I felt like the city needed a little culture, so I'd bring a pop culture event here. But seriously, though, as I did have a I had the opportunity with my previous company to be an exhibitor at some different Comic-Con events around the country and seeing the – or actually more feeling the energy that is involved in a Comic-Con, I wanted to have one here. You know, first I tried to figure out if Salt Lake had Comic-Cons, and we've had some great events. You know, there's some other good, you know, really fantastic shows that people put on here. But as far as a full-blown Comic-Con, that really hasn't happened here. And so that's why I wanted to do one here. I wanted to have my friends and, you know, the community experience that.
And so what is Comic-Con all about? What does it do, and what happens there?
Well, it's interesting. Some people hear the word Comic-Con. Many of them think it's comic books, but I've had some people think it was like comedian, you know, Comic-Con. And so that's what it's not.
Right.
Yeah. Although, you know, a comedian could come and perform there and do well. So it is – Comic-Con is really – it's a pop culture festival is what we've kind of termed it. And it's just about anything that's fun or pop culture – it fits in.
Yeah, it seems so, but it seems to have like a really heavy geek influence, right? Like you have
you've got your
sci-fi guys, of which I am one, by the way.
Oh, excellent.
And you've got, you know, people in fantasy, and you've got people in comic books, you've got all of that.
Horror. Yeah,
I
as well. I mean, horror, paranormal, all of that stuff. Comic books are the core of what Comic-Con was about and what started the phenomenon. And comic books cover so many genres that if you can say, well, if there's a comic book about it, Walking Dead, for example, which is so huge here.
So you're going to have these big name guests coming in, but what actually happens at the Comic-Con event? People get to like meet their, you know, their sort of
their heroes,
their
right?
heroes, right? Yeah. Exactly. And then there's all sorts of side events as well. Is that
there are? Nobody's going to experience Comic-Con completely. We talked earlier about you being from San Diego and experiencing the Comic-Con down there, not necessarily going to the event, but at least seeing how it impacted the city.
Yeah.
Comic-Con is – there's just too much under one roof for any 10 people to absorb. I'll start off – we have vendors from around the nation and a lot of fantastic local vendors. We have, of course, comic book creators, artists, and writers. We had some great local talent, as well as we've brought in a lot of people from around the nation. So if you want a chance to meet the writers or artists behind the comic book that you are a fan of, you can do that.
Okay.
Unique products, a lot of fun Harry Potter trinkets or, you know, just anything cool like that.
Yeah.
T-shirts.
Good gift buying opportunity, among other things.
Great gift. But I think most people just buy stuff for themselves. But it is a fantastic place to get gifts, too. And people have seen a lot of the celebrities that we're bringing in. We've got just an amazing cast of celebrities that we've been able to assemble.
Well, who are the biggest names?
Well, it's kind of hard to say the biggest.
Okay.
Some are more widely recognized, but to every one of the celebrities that we have announced, we've had people go on our Facebook and say, oh, well, now I'm going to come because that person's going to be there. So every celebrity that we're bringing to them, that's the biggest person. But going from the list, was the most widely known, William Shatner is a big one. Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah.
Lou Ferrigno,
the original Hulk.
The original Hulk, yeah. Tia Carrere from Wayne's World and Relic Hunter and some other events. Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict from Battlestar Galactica, which is really fun. We've been able to get both of them together. Dirk Benedict was also in the A-Team. He was a face on the A-Team. But
he spans a couple of genres and probably draws people for both reasons.
Though. Right. And what's fun is with the A-Team, we actually brought out Dwight Schultz, who was on the A-Team as well. So we have Dirk Benedict that has the Battlestar Galactica and the A-Team, you know, people that co-starred with him on those both those events. And Richard Hatch, I'll say about him, is he does a lot of events here in Utah, not signing events, but he comes out and teaches acting classes, and he's been participating in some film and things out here as well.
You know, and I know that that William Shatner came here early on in his acting career. He performed at the, I think it was Pioneer Memorial Theater.
Wow.
in the 60s. And if I got the chance to talk to him, I was going to ask him. You know, 1960, whatever, you played this role at Pioneer Theater Company here in Utah. What have you been doing since then?
Yeah, exactly. That's a funny thing, yeah. Yeah, have you done anything since that role?
Yes.
Yeah, because we know you're famous for that role, and that's why we have you here in Utah. But what else have you done?
Ever since that time. So do you guys work in conjunction with the, you know, San Diego Comic-Con, which they kind of call Comic-Con?
Yeah, we don't. Just to clarify on that, there's Comic-Cons around the nation, and Comic-Con has become a description more than a brand. And so San Diego does have, they are the originator of the Comic-Con event, but there's hundreds of them around the nation. Just didn't have one here.
Didn't have one here yet.
Yeah.
So when and where is this going to be? And we'll repeat this at the end.
Sure. September 5th through the 7th at the Salt Palace Convention Center.
Great. And, you know, but wasn't it initially going to be in Sandy for a time?
Yeah. And we were excited about that. The people out in Sandy were treating us very well. But we started off with one hall with an option on two halls. And they have five halls total there. And then we got to a point. Ticket sales were strong enough. And these are all pre-sales. And we know that kind of anticipating where things will go in Utah, it's easy to see that people are going to wait to the event to buy tickets. But anyway, the pre-sales were so strong that we said, okay, we need to get more halls. And we moved to three, then four. And ultimately, the other thing about the convention centers is that the downtown convention center has capacity to have more people. Even on the same square footage, you can have more people in the hall. And so we got to the point where we realized we could not, capacity-wise, we could not stay out at Southtown. And the management company actually manages the downtown convention center and the Sandy Convention Center. So it was indifferent to say, well, hey, let's move you downtown because they had space there for us.
Even before your inaugural event, you outgrew your original venue.
That's yes. Well, and that's a testament to the people here. We had a theory that the people here in Salt Lake and all the surrounding areas really wanted to have this event here, and just the way that people have responded have proven. I mean, we are setting records. I mean, just the direction we're going, we anticipate that we'll be the number one first-year Comic-Con event. You know, to be able to say first year and be as large as it's looking to be,
right.
that all the people that are involved in Comic-Cons, you know, the celebrities and their managers and the artists and everybody will look at Salt Lake and we'll say that's the place to be.
Hey, so I saw that there are some side events that go along with the convention, and what I'm really wondering about is what is sci-fi speed dating?
Oh, good one. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, it's a speed dating, but you have to come in a costume. I think other places may call it a geek dating, but it's really going to be a fun event.
So the idea is you dress up like your favorite sci-fi character or a sci-fi character and you show
up. You know what? I don't think we're going to discriminate if you're not a sci-fi character, if you're doing fantasy or, you know, you come as an elf.
Right. Well,
that's great. Let's go ahead and let you maybe meet somebody else that will speak Elvish with you.
Or Ferengi.
Ferengi, yeah.
Or Klingon.
Klingon. There you go. Okay. It would be interesting to find out how these Romeo and Juliet stories could develop from this speed dating event.
I'm sure that it's going to be something to witness, definitely.
Yes.
So what other – like, I mean, I know that there's a number of events going on under the roof, but are there –
lots of panels. I'll just say that there will be a lot of panels on whether it's filmmaking, whether it's costume design, art, digital art. We've got Adobe coming out to run several Photoshop courses and things like that. So anybody interested in doing – digital art in producing comic books. Adobe's going to have a great booth. One of the really big attractions that we have, and this is fun, we have Weta Digital. Weta Digital is coming from New Zealand. It's actually Weta Workshop, and Digital is a portion of the group, so I end up saying that, but it's Weta Workshop is the official name of the company. And they had one of the most amazing booths in San Diego. And to stand out, you know, be a giant among giants is really impressive. Well, they're bringing that exact same booth here to Salt Lake.
They're from New Zealand. Were they involved in the Lord of the Rings series?
Yes, yeah, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And I'll tell you about the booth they had is they had a giant statue of the Azog figure. If you saw The Hobbit, the Azog is the king of the orcs.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one that the dwarfs are fighting, and he gets his arm chopped off. Very menacing character. Well, Manu Bennett was a guest that we had signed up before. Well, Manu is the actor underneath the digital character that was created for the movie. So he's the Andy Serkis, as Andy Serkis was for Gollum in the Lord of the Rings. Manu Bennett is the performer, the voice performer, and the motion capture, both facial and physical, for the Azog figure. And he's doing the next Lord of the Rings. He just finished doing the motion capture for that a couple months ago.
For the next Hobbit movie, yeah.
I'm sorry, for the next Hobbit. Yeah, did I say Lord of the Rings?
It's a
sin to not get that right.
You're fine. Yeah, we were talking about San Diego Comic-Con and how...
We were talking about San Diego, that it's how inundated it is with all the cosplayers, all the people in costume, and it's like you can't be in San Diego without feeling its presence somewhere. And I mentioned that San Diego during that time is the safest place on Earth with all the superheroes
that are
in the city.
So how soon before we here in Salt Lake City eclipse the San Diego Comic-Con? I mean, when's that going to happen?
Yeah, let's set a goal for 2 years. How's that? Let's not be aggressive here. Let's just say 2 years.
2 years sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Seriously, what is the expected attendance? Maybe that's difficult to say since I know this is the first one. But do you guys have an expected attendance yet?
We do. And that number keeps changing,
okay.
Which is fun. When we started off, we were thinking we'd be happy with 10,000 people attending the event.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started saying, well, 10 to 20, then 20 to 25, then 25 to 35. And now we're actually thinking it could potentially go beyond that. Lots going to depend on the ticket sales at the door, but we've had such strong pre-sales that by projections given to us from other Comic-Con events to say how many tickets will sell at the door relative to how many sell before, that we could be even, 60,000 people. And that would be quite the event here in Salt Lake.
Right, it would be.
Yeah.
Having lived in San Diego and seeing the madness around Comic-Con there, is everybody going to be dressed up?
Even in San Diego, I wouldn't say more than 10% of the people that attended the Comic-Con were dressed up.
Yeah.
But 10% is a lot of people dressed up. And the costumes that people wear are just phenomenal. You could spend – if you went to Comic-Con and just looked at the costumes and did nothing else, you would still feel like you hadn't seen enough. So, I mean, that is an event in and of itself.
Yeah,
but then you've got all the celebrity autographs and the chance to meet them and the vendors and the artists, all the, the comic book creators. You have too much.
Hey, so is your sort of lineup of guests now entirely firm? Is it done?
It's not done. I still, after the words got out to the talent managers about how well the show's going, I'm getting calls or emails almost every day from people saying, hey, what about this person? You'd like to book this person? And there's a fine line. We can't just book everybody that wants to come. We have to kind of keep it at a reasonable level so that it's just not a madhouse. And save some for next year and the year after that too.
There's so much we could go into, but we were our allotted time here for this interview. But it's an exciting event, and it should be a great one for downtown Salt Lake City.
And all the surrounding areas, the state and the surrounding states as well, with the people coming in from all over the place.
Dan Farr, Salt Lake Comic Con founder and producer, thanks for coming in and speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me here. This is fun.
You can find this interview and all of the interviews we feature on the program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. Stay with us. And thanks for joining us for The Rundown here on KCPW. That's all the time we have today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Coming up tomorrow on the program, artist Calder Kamen, who was just announced as the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art's new face of the art truck. I'm Roger McDonough. Stay tuned. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.